Welcome to our broadcast, Essential Leadership Skills. Today we have a very special guest with us, Diana Lowe, the CEO of Blue Light Leadership. Diana is an expert in emotional intelligence for remote leaders, and she will share with us some of her insights and tips on how to lead effectively in this new era of work. Diana has a wealth of experience in working with top executives from Fortune 500 companies, helping them transform their teams and their communication skills. She uses a unique approach based on positive psychology, which focuses on the strengths and well-being of the whole person. Blue Light Leadership is also a women and minority-owned company, which reflects Diana's commitment to diversity and inclusion. We are very excited to have Diana with us today, so please join me in giving her a warm welcome.
Thank you for connecting with us here at Touchstone Publishers. Please join our group, Essential Leadership Skills, and share your leadership knowledge with us all.
Good morning, all. I know. Yeah, it's morning time, some place, and I'm always going to say good morning. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we do have that elusive subject we need to talk about. And as I said in our introduction, Diana is here. She's going to help us get through this. Emotional intelligence. Thank you very much for hanging out with us today. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. I can't wait. This is my favorite topic.
Yes, I think, because it's one of those topics that I think has become a slogan. I think it's one of those topics we really got to dive a little bit deep in, because it's a slump. I just believe people think, oh, emotional intelligence, that's important. But before we begin to dive deep, here's my question for you. What is it about you or your organization that we need to know, we probably can't see on your website? What is it about you or your organization that would just be nice for us to know about you, we don't see it?
For me, it's heart. And I really hope that when I talk, when I write, when I connect with people, that they feel my heart and what I'm trying to accomplish in my mission. I think that this is, for me, this is not just a topic that I chose that I'm just going with. For me, this is really personal. Having been affected by people who lack awareness of their behavior or accountability, having been affected by this with my own mental health challenge, and I hope you're still there.
Yes, yes.
Oh, there you go. Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm here.
My screen changed. Yep. Having been affected by that, it's really personal for me. So this is my life's work, and this is something I will continue to do. So you'll hear this interview and many more to come for decades.
Sounds like it's filled with passion right now. It just feels like you have a lot of passion for it. So here's my first question for you. What is emotional intelligence? What is it?
Oh, that's a really good one, because I think the easiest way to describe emotional intelligence is understanding your own emotions so that you can understand others. And I know that there are a lot of academic descriptions, but for me, if you don't understand your own emotions or what you're going through, how can you really understand others? So I think it's an exercise in mindfulness around thoughts, feelings, and the research shows that when we know that about ourselves, we have lower incidences of mental health issues. And I can say that's true for myself.
So I want to ask you, based upon just that answer, so being mindful, having awareness for ourselves, that all sounds great on a personal level. I'm in a large organization. How does this emotional intelligence thing benefit my organization?
So that's the beautiful thing. When you have people who are aware of their own feelings, their own ideas, their decisions, their behaviors, then you have an organization where you have more creativity, where you have less conflict. And by conflict, destructive conflict, because there can be positive conflict as well. But you have more people meeting deadlines. You have more camaraderie. You have more profitability. Studies show that when a person or an organization invests, for every dollar they invest in emotional intelligence, they get 6 to 8 back. Who wouldn't want that return?
Okay, that's an important writable moment right there. For every dollar you invest in your team for emotional intelligence, you're going to get $6 to $8 back. And it sounds like you're saying through productivity increases mostly?
It's productivity. It's reduced sick days. Right. I don't know if you've ever had a leader where you just hated coming to work, or because the leader was how they were, they lacked that awareness. You ended up getting sick more because your body was working harder. Companies who work on this, they typically see lower sick days. They typically see lower health costs. They see higher engagement, less retention and turnover. So yeah, all the reasons, Glenn, all the reasons.
There's a lot of reasons why people should do that. When we're talking about, it seems like to me it's a complicated subject to train. Would you agree with that?
I would say the opposite. And I would say because everybody has emotions, then everybody knows themselves better than anyone else. And because we know what happiness is, because we know what sadness is, we know what frustration, resentment, all the feels, we know what it's like having conflict with people. It's a very normal part of our life. Therefore, everyone who is in this training or in this coaching, they have their own filter, if you will, of expertise. What we do is we ask questions to open that up and try to understand, okay, now that you see these patterns of behaviors, how is that affecting your environment? And are you getting the results you want? Because oftentimes we're not really aware.
Okay. How are we training people then? If you're training me and I'm part of an organization, maybe I'm a mid-level manager, how do you train me to start to become aware of these emotions that I'm having and how to get them under control? Because I think most of the time we operate on automatic pilot.
Yes. And I think if we tell people, hey, you are doing this, you are being this way, it falls on deaf ears, right? So I see in my practice, in my company, the best way to do that is through data. Data is what makes people understand things that seem maybe not that understandable. So when we look at behaviors, and here at Blue Light Leadership, what we do is we look at 42 specific behaviors, and we use an assessment that is globally tested. So it's not just US based, it's around the world, it's in different cultures. And we look at those 42 behaviors and we ask the people around you, because I can't tell you, Glenn, how many times I meet people and they're like, oh, I'm really high EI. Like, I have high EI. You can't calibrate just by yourself. You need to be in an environment where it can calibrate. So we look at assessments, we look at quantitative and qualitative data, and then we take it from there. And it's really upon the person to see which behaviors would create the best impact or the biggest impact.
Are we in danger there of dividing people out into categories so much that if I'm hiring, I'm going to hire the same category for all the entire company? I want everybody to use EI, for example, or SI, whatever it's going to be. Are we in danger of doing that?
Potentially. However, the best part, I think, is when we don't do that, we still hire people that we like or who are like us, right? We have our own biases and we have our own, the type of people, the way of working in which we like. If we're a fast-paced person, we want people who are fast-paced. And I think the best part about it is we need to have a mix of people. We need to have a mix of behaviors and skills, and we need to constantly be working on that together, because it's not just going to happen automatically. But when you have people who are conscious of their behavior, think about this. If you're working with a group of people and they're really conscious about their behavior, how they're affecting people, how they're coming off, what a great place for growth, collaboration. That means, Glenn, you could tell me, hey, Diana, you did this and, you know, it didn't really work for the client. Did you notice that? And I would feel safe to say, hey, I didn't notice that and I'm sorry. Let's fix it and make it better. Those are the types of environments that have high EI.
I have a question then, because in order for me to feel safe in that area, I have to trust you. How are you teaching people to, as a leader, to get the team to trust them?
Yeah.
In other words, empathy. How do we build empathy?
Oh, empathy. That's okay. Both. So we're going to have to pause right here and do another episode on empathy.
Okay. You know what? That's actually kind of fair, isn't it? But yeah. You shouldn't have said that. Now you're on the hook for it. But that is fair.
Hey, I will be on the hook for that. I think that here's the thing. In my experience working with people in general, not just leaders, but people in general, we all think we're great. We're like, yeah, I'm great. I do this great. Or we tend to know ourselves. However, if we have the ability to sit down and really have an open conversation, have psychological safety, and in order to get that, we have to get to know people without an agenda, We have to get to make the intention of understanding who you are, what's important to you, seeing you as you are. That's where you create trust. It starts with conversations. And if, let's say, Glenn, you and I are having conversations and you don't felt seen or heard, it starts with me starting to look and say, Glenn used to be really talkative and now he's not. What's going on there? Is it something at home? Is it something at work? Is he facing a health problem? It really comes from the heart. And I know that in business, that can be a dirty word depending on your industry. But the truth is connectedness comes from the heart.
Do we not have a problem, though, with this connecting, the collaboration thing when we're looking at it coming from the heart? Are we not putting ourselves in line for EOC violations, the emotional violations of people's rights and things like that? But I can go back to an old story that we're not going to go through, but I want this guy's job. And maybe all he was really just trying to do is try to help me. But he kept on staying. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? Do we not run that risk? And if we do, how do we avoid that?
Yeah. So for me, it's really simple. I think firstly, understanding a person's communication style. There are certain styles in which people communicate. There are certain strengths which people have. So let's say to me, what I'm hearing you say is somebody who's more, they're driven, they're really competitive. And these can be absolutely not only values, but these can be their strengths. And yes, do we need to guard ourselves from people who have bad intentions? Absolutely, 100% true. We only learn that through having conversations, through interactions, through having assessments or growing together. That's where we learn that. And if I'm telling you, Glenn, let's say, for example, I'm out for your job and I keep doing things that are unethical to you. And you're telling me in my own language that, hey, this is a boundary and a line that I've drawn. That's a part of the conversation too. Emotional intelligence is not just like rainbows and cookies and puppies. We have to have those hard conversations. And we have to be okay to draw our lines and be clear.
So when we talk about emotional intelligence, it sounds like you almost said that I need to speak it in a language that you're comfortable with. So if you're not doing your job right, if I'm not doing my job right, if you speak it to me in a way that's that hard driving, get it done type of person, you speak it to me that way, I'm not going to go for it.
I love
these
this.
Different types of.
Sorry.
No. So. I'm just wondering, the study of these different types of communication styles, is that separate or part of emotional intelligence? How would you get me to understand that I got to speak it in your language?
Oh, I love this question, Glenn. This is like my heart question. So for me, I think EI is pretty simple. If you break it down, I like to break it down to DISC because it's really not about the personality style of the person. It's really about the way in which they best communicate and the way in which they best thrive. So I see this a lot with the people I work with, especially really driven leaders who are like, I want to get things done. I want things done yesterday. So they're fast paced, they're working, they're task oriented, and they always get the goal. However, when either they are working with peers or people are working with them, they're not clear about the language in which they speak. So I'll give you an example. Glenn, if you and I, we speak English, if we go to China, we're going to have to learn a little bit of Chinese to get by so we can make sure that we can get to places, get directions, use the bathroom. That's exactly the way I talk about it. So if you come to my country in my workspace and you know that I speak German, you're going to come and say, like, hey, Diana, I see that these deadlines are important to you. I see, right? So we're going to speak in a deadline talk. Whereas oftentimes I see a lot of people who are people focused talking to somebody who's task focused. Hey, the people aren't really happy with how fast things are going. We just need to understand people's like language of communication. So I call that's just DISC in my opinion. And so we start with DISC and we also look at people's strengths. And oftentimes a misunderstood strength can be seen as annoying. You know what okay. I mean by that?
Yeah, yeah. So if I do, I think that's a very powerful way to put it. I want to ask you, though, your assessment that you said you use to create the class, does that include the DISC program, the multiple personality? I don't know, not multiple personalities, but the DISC is communication style personality. Does that include that at the start?
Yeah. So anytime I work with somebody, we do three things. I want to know what's a person's strengths. And oftentimes, especially I see this with women leaders. It doesn't mean it doesn't happen with non-women leaders, but I see a lot of the times we're so good at something, we don't even see our own strengths. So I want to know their strengths. I want them to be able to articulate their strengths, because if we stay within, that's where we thrive. Number two, I want to know your language in which you speak in. And I use that as DISC. So if we understand your language, then it's easier to say, hey, this person isn't speaking my language. Let me shift the way I'm speaking so they can hear me, and not louder, but in their words. And then also we do the assessment. So we look at three different ways so we can really make it robust in their environment.
Okay, so if you're going to train me, and let's say I am that D level person, I'm just get it done, I'm just commanding. First thing, before we even go there, tell us what DISC is.
So DISC is a way, it's a good question. I never have to define DISC, so it caught me. But DISC is really a way for us to observe measurable behaviors in communication. So there have been several behavioral psychologists who have noted and worked on DISC to what it is today. And they've noticed that you can break people up in different categories, if you will. And we're all really a mix of these categories, but these categories help us understand, are we people focused? Are we task focused? Are we fast paced, or are we more deliberately paced? And each of those categories has its own desirable behavior traits. And once we understand that, if I'm talking to a people person, I'm not going to talk data, because that's not their language.
Okay. Right? Okay. So that makes sense then. So if you look at the preferred mode of communication, that's the DISC program. Do you use the right, I know that's out of date, but the right brain, left brain theory, do you use that at all?
Or any thoughts about that? No, I don't actually.
Well, that's really out of date, because the brain never looked the right brain, left brain. This never operated that way. But that's, I find a lot of people still teach that. If you're aware of how people's brain work, then you're in better shape. I just want to dig a little bit deeper with this communication, introvert and extrovert. How does that play into the communication to a teammate?
I don't know enough like empirical evidence or research on introvert and extrovert, but what I am finding, and you can tell me if you're finding this too, in post-pandemic life, even extroverts are having a difficult time being extroverts, and introverts are more introverted than before. I think so. I don't want to say it's passé or it's not relevant. I think it could be, but really that to me, the introversion, extroversion, and ambiversion, if you will, that's like where you get your energy from. I am 100% extrovert. And I find even myself in crowds, because of post-pandemic, things have shifted for me. So I'm actually curious to see if there's research on that. Now that we talk about that, I'm curious.
I hear it. I've heard it before. I haven't found the time to chase down the research of it, but I'm with you. Now, just to throw this out and see if you agree, and if you don't, say so. But I think this idea of introvert and extrovert is misplayed. I think if you're an introvert person, you recharge your batteries by being by yourself. Okay. If you're an extroverted person, you recharge your battery by being around others. I think that's the bottom line. I don't think it goes
any deeper.
I think
that's the bottom line.
But you might have to coach me that. Yeah. Yeah.
I think if you're a mom, no, I think that's so true. And I think like for me, I have very young kids. So I think as a mom, even if I'm an extrovert, I need some time away and I need some me time. So I think that's actually changing. And like I said, I think more of us are it's coming more to a conscious awareness of where we get our energy. So that's why, so I study positive psychology. I know we talked a little bit about this, getting my master's in applied positive psychology. And really, I think as we become more aware of our strengths, where we thrive and where we work in our best place, it's less about getting energy from people or not. I think it's more about the environments in which we put ourselves in. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It makes great sense because, like I said, the environment we put ourselves in that cover that, puts that direction. So I had a different question for you, but you just sponsored a different question. Remote
I
workers
do that.
And office workers. Yeah, you did that very well. It makes it tough for me. I don't know how to frame it up, but you know, remote workers and hybrid workers, they're different environments, but they also could be same communication style, but the environment is different. Does that change our play for the emotional intelligence factor? Because you're remote, you're at the office, or you're a hybrid. You think that changes that?
So I think, in my opinion, I hear a lot people or leaders, professional people saying, when I was in the office, I loved it because I got energy and I was great with people. And now that I'm not in the office, I feel like I'm not that good with people. My initial question is, were you originally really good with people? Because people are around doesn't mean you are being intentional. It doesn't mean you are giving quality feedback. It doesn't mean that you are creating a positive environment. It doesn't mean that you are necessarily supporting them or guiding them. So I think my deeper question is, how intentional have you been with people? Like just because two people are married in the same room, in the same house, it doesn't mean that they have a good relationship, right? And I think that a lot of people think, well, we were in person, so we had a good relationship. So now I think this is giving us an opportunity as professionals to be more intentional with our relationships and say, like, I know I have worked with groups, Glenn, who have worked together for 30 or 40 years, like senior people. And in a 5-minute intentional conversation, they've learned more about each other than over that time. So to me, it's about the intention. Yeah.
Wow. That's a big difference. And it also comes to the fact that I'm wondering, so you already laid out what emotional intelligence can do in each segment of business and why it's important. But what does it do for you in your personal life? Obviously, if you're happy at home, you can be happy at work a little bit better. But how does that play in your personal life?
I think the best way to think about it is that the currency at home is relationship. Even if you live by yourself, even if you might just have a roommate, relationship is the currency. And work, it's money, right? So we measure everything with money. How much money? Did we hit the deadline? Did we lose money? At home, it's the quality of those relationships. And if we can really be aware of our behavior with our children, with our parents, with our spouses, with our roommates, whoever is in our environment, we can really change the nature of our society. Honestly, I believe that. Because a child who feels valued and heard shows up differently at school than a child who does not. And a spouse or a loved one who feels loved at home and heard and cared about shows up differently at work. And that's the micro to the macro, which is society. So if we are able, like, for example, I'm not perfect. I mess up all the time. Last night, I lost myself in a moment of stress, and I yelled, hashtag surprise, I do it. Yeah. And I immediately realized, oh my goodness, that was not the right thing to do. And I apologized to everyone there in my vicinity, my kids, my husband. And I said, I'm going to take do over. I go, take two. because I said, that was not what I was trying to do. I just hit a limit. And so they felt they got the apology because that was the right thing to do. My kids saw that you make a mistake and you fix it right there in the space. And you shouldn't be perfect. Like, that lacks humanity, right? So the fact that if we can model this at home for our next generation, Glenn, we have children who are depressed. We have children who have extreme anxiety. Yes. These are emotions, right? this is where it's needed at home the most, at most.
I can't help but to agree with you on that. It just seems like we need to pull that into the home life and into the business life. I'm one of those few people who do not believe that such a thing as work-life balance is just life. Mm-hmm. Life balance, if you want to do that. I'm wondering, though, because doesn't some of this take, I think one part of emotional intelligence is self-regulation. We got to be able to regulate ourselves, discipline ourselves. Isn't that part of this? And how do we do it?
So that's a really good, I think, like, for me, the foundation is self-awareness, right?
Yes.
So there are different models. I don't know how intimately familiar you are with emotional intelligence or even your viewers, but there are many different models, all valid models. They all have something a little bit different. So some have emotional reasoning, some have emotional regulation. At the end of the day, a person who is not aware of their behavior around others creates problems, conflict, bad PR, destroys their reputation, doesn't create psychological safety. So at the end of the day, it starts with the self-awareness. Is my behavior giving me the results in which I need to have, right? How do we start that? I think the simplest way is you start with your breath. I think people want I know, right? So simple. People want this magical 10-step program. I have heard it said, and I say it, when you own your breath, you own your emotions. And oftentimes, if you can feel throughout the day yourself or observe yourself holding your breath, that's going to have some emotional things inside. Maybe you're holding your breath because you're angry, or you're anticipating something, or you're anxious. So breathing, and just like when you feel yourself, but it starts with awareness. If you don't know you're holding your breath.
Sometimes things are said, and this is why I love to do these broadcasts. Things are said that just kind of gets backed up by my life experience. And what you just said makes a lot of sense. When I used to coach people in giving talks or speaking, I always used to tell them, you've got to breathe.
Yeah.
Okay? The more nervous you are, the more you need to breathe.
Yeah.
And I think that's maybe very true for applying emotional intelligence. Based upon what you said, would you agree? Or how big of a role does that breath mean in emotional intelligence?
I think breath work is everything. I think that, like, besides it maybe having a mindful practice, which also helps you because you're focusing on breathing, I think that breath work is crucial to managing your emotions. Have you ever screamed so loudly you went out of breath? Or have you ever you were worried about something that you're just like holding yourself in? Obviously you're breathing because you're alive, but it's not the same as having a steady breath and having a steady cadence of breathing, because you can still feel the feelings. It's just, you're not holding on to them. You're starting to change your nature.
And it's almost like self-awareness, if you're aware of what you're breathing like, maybe that's the simplicity that leads to build the rest of these up.
When I watch my kids, for example, they teach this at my kids' school. And they said, when you're really angry, they teach something called the drain or something. So when you're really angry, you put your arms out and you put your fists together and you hold them. And then you you breathe out and you let the water, the mind water, come out of your hand. So it's like, I'm angry, angry. And then... But it has to do with the breath, moderating the breath. And I think that's what adults need more than kids need it, but adults need it too.
Yeah, there's a really good scene that you remind me of in Big Bang Theory. I think that's the funniest show on TV for a long time, where Sheldon was stressed out about something and Penny told him, just let it go. He was holding a pen in his hand. He said, just let it go. He goes, but I like this pen. It was an imaginary pen, but just let it go. And breathe. I think that's really important. Just let it go and breathe. Mm-hmm. I want to move just a hair because already over time here. So move you just a hair and ask you about this emotional intelligence. Why is it, so important? Why do we need it to create diversity, which I don't like the word diversity. Why do we need it to create inclusion in the workplace?
Mm-hmm. So culture is inclusion. And as successful businesses know, they have an identity and a culture. And some people will fit in cultures and some people won't fit in cultures. And I think the key here is to know, to be aware of what your one person, what a professional is signing up for, is to have that self-awareness of where they thrive. Early in my career, I did not have that awareness because for me, it was a little more trial and error. And I would imagine for many people it is. So I went into finance early in my career because I thought, hey, this is for me. I did not thrive in that culture. There was lack of inclusion in that culture. And thank goodness, because it's what I'm doing today and I love what I'm doing. Yeah. But at the same time, you can't have inclusion if you have people who are unaware of how their behavior affects other people.
Again, awareness. Again, it comes down to simply awareness, self-awareness. I want to be cautious of our time because we're going to go over our time period. But I want to ask you, what are you doing right now to help leaders be better leaders? What are you doing?
Oh, so many things. We at Blue Light Leadership, we do executive coaching. So we work with people, executive leaders, one-on-one to help them really understand where they're at in their own growth journey. Two, we do trainings. So sometimes a company needs team or intact teams or group training for emotional intelligence to start to awaken them to the idea of empathy at the workplace. And what does that look like? And that feels so touchy-feely. Help me understand. Then the other thing is we are starting, which I'm really excited about. I'm so excited about. We're starting a Leading with Emotional Intelligence group coaching program, which is a public program. And I'm so excited to do this because I wanted to do this for a long time. So we're getting it kicked off in May.
Okay. And where are people going to be able to find that? And if you, it's still 1st of April, really, but do you have a plan to get it, the word out, LinkedIn pages or Facebook groups and things like that?
Yes.
So if we put your LinkedIn, follow you on LinkedIn, people will be able to get that kind of online coaching.
That's right. So we're doing myself and my delivery, head of delivery. We are doing LinkedIn Lives all of April and all of May, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. PST. And that's just to really introduce people and educate them to what emotional intelligence is and why we need it. Exactly what you and I are doing here. Because at the end of the day, if we don't understand that we need it, why would we do this? So this is really just a warm up to get to know us, to get to know what the program is. And yeah, so LinkedIn Lives and we posted on our page and I posted on my own page too.
Okay. Doing any YouTube channel work, YouTube video channel work at all?
Yes. So what we coach on is going on YouTube as well. And that is, I'm a busy lady with school and kids and work and everything.
And your biggest challenge is with husbands. So I know we can be pains. Yeah. So.
I love him and I want to stay married. So it's a lot. It's a lot going on. But really, it's LinkedIn. We do have an Instagram. So we post there from time to time. And really, it's just following on LinkedIn. So yeah.
Okay. So all those links will be in the description. And just so the listeners know, we will be taking this podcast and breaking it apart and putting it up on LinkedIn, and we want to share it with your channel when it comes up. So we'll talk about that offline. Tell me, though, here's my question for you about your flagship training. How's that work? How's that divided out? So I assume at first you have assessments, like the first thing you do is assessments. The rest of that training, just give me highlights of it.
So we work with 6 modules. So you're right. We start with the assessments. We start with one-on-one, helping the leaders understand what their strengths are, how to articulate them, and sometimes where their weaknesses are. And we look at all of the data. So it's a robust, comprehensive picture of where they're at in their environment. Do people think they're too hard? Do people think they're not firm enough? So this, all the assessments give us this information of how they're doing in their environment. Then the next stage is we break our training down into 6 modules. And those 6 modules, we look at authenticity. We look at everything from creating trust to leading people to empathy to showing up as a genuine leader, somebody who people can trust. So really what it's all aiming for is how do we maximize the relationships in our environment in a heartful way, in a genuine way, and okay. that therefore ends up giving the business more money, better collaboration, lower turnover. Yeah.
So the theory is that people say emotional intelligence is soft skills, but if done right, it is really a hard skill. It is a profit, could turn your organization into a profit center.
Oh, yeah. And I think the best companies, we see this with the best companies, you have the best customer service. It's because they are caring for the people who make them the money, the customers, or internally, the company organization is caring for the people who are serving their customers.
Interesting.
And it all is a trickle-down effect.
Trickle-down effect. Okay. That's a unique conversation because you're talking about triple-down effect. Trickle down. We're talking about the leaders have to get it first. The senior levels have to get it, and then it comes down.
Yeah.
A senior level person tends not to want this. How do we get past that? I guess we just point out the money to them.
Yes, you have to. So you got it. We got to speak in their language. Why should I invest in this? Why?
Great example.
Why should I care? So I actually have an ROI report. So if somebody were to work with us and say, like, how much money am I going to get based on how much money am I going to spend? I can give them an ROI report because that's money language, right? That's business language. However, right. I think what we're finding, Glenn, is that we're really making a shift from that old school, keep your problems at the door mentality. That doesn't work. Like you said, it's life. That's like saying, keep your arm at the door and don't bring it in. Like you can't do that. We are whole people. And I think our generations now working are seeing that because they're experiencing higher levels of burnout, depression, anxiety, mental health crises. And so we can say, I think the people who have that old thought of, I don't really care about your feelings, they will attract a certain type of employee, leader, person. And if that's their culture, that's okay. But I don't think the younger generations will put up with that.
They won't put up with that and they won't stay there. It won't create any level. You'll be always replacing people,
That's okay. Right.
And before I ask my last question, I greatly appreciate your sharing. I definitely going to take you. I want to get to this empathy discussion. So my next question is everything but empathy. Okay. What question should I have asked that I didn't ask? What is the one or two questions that I should have asked you that I didn't ask?
That's a good question. So what question should you have asked that you didn't ask?
Yeah.
I think the questions you asked,
because we're going to have another discussion.
I think the questions you ask are appropriate because I think what's on most people's mind is, I know what EI is. I'm really good at it. But I think the questions you ask are more about, like you said, digging in deeper and just helping us think, are we good at it? Could we get better at it? And the truth is anybody can work on this. That's why I love it, because it's just a set of skills that when we're more intentional, we change our environment.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So I think you asked perfect questions.
For sure. No, I don't believe that, but okay. I will never believe that. Perfect. What I am going to ask people to do is to submit questions, because sometime here soon, we're going to have a discussion about empathy, and maybe folks can submit their questions in the comments about empathy and what they need to hear and how they need to figure out to take place of it. Because empathy is also another one of those words in my mind that have turned into slogans. We've got, I think people use emotional intelligence. Oh, I know all about emotional intelligence. It's a slogan. Oh, I have empathy. I'm empathetic. It's a slogan. So we're going to have that discussion. I thank you for your time. Mm-hmm. I thank you for going over time. Although, obviously, we probably need three more sessions to get this topic covered.
I think so. I think so. It's so deep, but thank you for your time and thank you for your thoughtful questions. I love talking about this. I love sharing this. And actually, I'll share with you a link. I have a free resource that if people want to start working and developing their emotional intelligence, they can just download it. So it's just 7 ways.
Have you shared that? Make sure if you haven't. Oh, no. Is that the Blue Light Leadership?
So it's a resource.
Oh, that's your LinkedIn page.
It's a resource that we have on our site just to help people. If you're like, I would like to work on this, where do I start? It's just a guide that shows you 7 things that you can start doing today. Yeah.
Please send that to me because I'll make sure it's all be in all the descriptions of everything we do. Absolutely fantastic. I appreciate your time so much. I really do. I didn't think I was going to get out of here on time, but I tried. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And thank you to all the people listening. Yeah.